system. I find you in the shows and moving are great. And being a nerd, there's sign systems everywhere you go.
Disney lawsuit.
What do you say? Way to put a damper in it. You're supposed to say bingo.
You're right. I did miss my cue. Well, in some ways. Hi.
Welcome back to Design System Office Hours Podcast. How are you doing today, PJ?
I am very good. How about yourself?
I'm great. That was the theme song for Bluey, every child's favorite show, including our children, supposedly.
It is it's a very common show on the television set at home.
Yeah, today we wanted to talk to you all about complexity, and this was stemmed from, I think, of many conversations that I've had with PJ over the years. PJ had released a blog post talking about complexities and how that could take you for a wild ride and kind of blow itself out of the water. And it touches back on, I think you were saying this to me just as an example, but I remember a few years ago when I was talking to you about our type ramp on Disney, and you had mentioned it would be preferable if you had 5 different type sizes. And funny enough, I think for something like a device like Roku that is like lower powered, possibly could only load one font base, I think we might have only had 5 or 6 different typefaces. And that was designing in that fashion was certainly enough for me, but it was not enough for the visual design team and the visual systems folks. So yeah, I wanted to just sort of tap you to talk and go a little back and forth on complexity in design systems.
Yeah, it's probably the most interesting subject to me within the realm of design systems. And I think it's typically not as well understood for folks outside of systems because they don't have to, it's not their job to understand how all the pieces fit together. But that is, complexity is the thing. It takes off really quickly in systems and can be the death knell of it. And just to backtrack, I'm not sure if I said 5 is the ideal number. It's more of the least amount of things you need is the right amount of things that you need, that you should have, because yeah, it in all aspects of a design system, the more you have makes it harder to maintain and understand how to use the system.
Yeah. Typography is a great example. And that, for some reason, I'll remember the way and the manner that I interpreted your message to me. But I do remember just auditing the type ramp on Disney for Disney Plus across television, mobile, and phone. And obviously phone was had the least amount of type sizes. It was under, I believe it was under 10. But for web, we had something like 15 different type sizes. And I know that it was spanning responsive design, but I feel like it became a point where there was just a lot of in-between sizes. There wasn't a good guidance around them. And it was, I think, a fault of us of being system maintainers, being reactive to designers and trying to be yes people and support all of these things, keeping in mind that they're tokens at the end. So you could have an infinite amount of these things.
Yeah. So here, this is, let's use this example as to why complexity becomes complex. I am a product designer who just joined the team and I'm learning how to use the system. And I've got 16 friggin' type sizes to choose from. When do I use the 12th biggest versus the 13th biggest? Well, we don't really know. Okay, well, then I'll just use the 13th one. Well, don't use it that way because we don't use it that way anywhere else. Well, like, how do I know? Like, and what's the meaning of each one? Well, we don't really have a meaning for it. We just added them. Okay, what you're doing is creating a lot of ambiguity in terms of usage and a lot of room for interpretation. And if you create room for interpretation, people will interpret. And they'll typically interpret differently because we're all a little different. That's the first issue, more from a usage standpoint. From a implementation and maintenance standpoint, let's say you want to change the middle font size. Well, now what you've said is you've wanted to change 9 font sizes because you can't just change one. There's a relationship between all of them. You may have to change all 16 of them just by wanting to change one font size. And now all of a sudden you're in the midst of understanding the implications of changing font sizes across the entirety of your system. And that in and of itself can be a huge undertaking. So the less that you have, the less, you know, there's that old age old saying, the less moving pieces. You want less moving pieces. Well, this is literally moving pieces in your system. And the less of them that you have, the more you understand how those pieces fit together and what their purpose is. And I swear this is the last thing, but it, you know, I'm a big believer that everything in a system should have a purpose and be there for a specific intention. And the more you have in there, the harder it is to delineate the purpose of one thing versus the purpose of another. And that's why I'm a big fan of a distilled constrained system, because it's much easier to articulate the purpose of every element in the system.
Yeah, I think a really good example of how you could simplify things is, let's say, like border radius, right? Maybe you just have 2 different border radiuses, and that's either small or large, or 1 and 2. But that would surely from like a new designer point of view, really distill it down for you, because there's only 2 different sizes, and you can even put in the description, oh, the larger border radius is used for XYZ only, and that's a great example. And this goes back to a conversation that I had. I love talking about the minutia of this, not only with you, but on Twitter. We talked, there was a conversation about spacing tokens, and I remember chiming in a thread, and there was a talk about whether spacing should be in t-shirt sizing. So what should it be, extra small to large? And then I think I was responding to something, and Nathan Curtis had responded to me. There are issues if you use t-shirt sizing, because what if you need a medium?
Exactly.
It happens all the time though, right? Like, I'll guarantee it. Like if you do this t-shirt sizing mechanism for spacing, once it gets pushed and it's landed, someone's going to come to you and say, I need something between 4 and 8, or I need something between 8 and 12. Then what do? You have to, like you said, rejigger the whole naming structure, try to fit it in possibly. Many things could go wrong if you try to support too many.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole other level of complexity. It's just the way we name things. And I will say it, you know, loud and unproud that Gestalt has its names as small, medium, large. But the problem with that is, yeah, what if something in the middle? Luckily, we bypass that with our tokens, where we're not using like dark gray, darker gray, darkest gray, or darker gray. And we just use numbers. So while it's abstract, and I acknowledge that, it's harder to understand that. Although, what's darker gray versus darker gray, you know, for what it's worth. But I would actually encourage a numeric scale for many of these things, even sizing, using a numeric scale, because then you have latitude. You know, worst case scenario, if you have to shunt something in between 0 and 100, you can, you know, it can be 50. Is it idyllic if it's 0, 50, 100, 100, you know, 200, 300? No, but at least it makes sense. And at least there's a place for it if and when it occurs. And so that's a whole other level of complexity of just, you know, navigating how to use a component. And that is another thing that we're constantly trying to simplify, is just the API around using a component. You know, do we have simple terms? Are they consistent? Are we not overthinking this and providing too many options? But yeah, that's another area where it just, complexity will bite you in the butt.
Yeah. I have a good example, and maybe this is a question for you, but then also a future guest that we're going to have, when we're talking about color accessibility and other things. Let's imagine that we wanted to lighten and darken colors. So obviously we could do that manually by possibly shifting HSL values, like the L value, or we could use darken and lighten. Would you create a specific base color for the dark and the light and values, or would you use something like darken and lighten?
That's a good question. I mean, ideally the colors you use map to the source of truth. So if that's a token, great. Although I will say this, I think we typically have as an industry, we have too many design tokens to cover these sorts of things. I have seen some really interesting topics around using functions as modifiers. So imagine if we pared down the amount of design tokens available to our customers and then use modifiers such as, you know, lighten, like CSS functions to lighten and darken. I'm rambling a bit here, but I would say that if it's something like a hover or an active, something that is an interaction state and not a core part of the, you know, the default states of a component, that could be an ideal place to use functions, which would then theoretically reduce the need for so many tokens to cover all these different, like hover, tap, you know, all these. That would be one area where I'm actually really interested in exploring, as long as they're private colors, meaning they're covering interaction states, temporary states that need to be in the system, but don't necessarily need to be known in gory detail by everyone who's using the components. That was a little rambly, but that would be my answer.
Especially given the hype right now with variables and Figma. So we do, like, the example for me, and I think you laid it out, but I'll just lay it out some more with this specific color example. So let's say blue 100 is our button color. On hover, maybe you want to lighten it 10. What I would do is I've become obsessed with linting specifically on our side, just to make sure everything maps to a thing. And unfortunately, in order to lint it, I had to create a specific variable or a style previously that would say blue 100 minus 10 or blue 100 lighten. But those, I think right now, in terms of styles, and I think for sure variables too, you could hide them. So for the consumer that's utilizing this, they will never see that. So yeah, I was just wondering what you thought about that, because I got really into, I really baked out my color variable situation with all the different permutations of base colors plus lighten and darken modes.
Yeah. I even wonder if we could expand the definition of tokens and have functions be added as tokens. So you have a modifier token family, and there's a lighten and darken. Now all of a sudden, instead of, if you have if you have eight, I'm just using arbitrary numbers, but eight hues in your color palette, instead of having individual, you know, eight individual colors for each one of those states, you have these darken, lighten, you know, hue shift, some things of that nature that could theoretically reduce a ton of the exponential ramp, like the exponential increase in permutations of your color palette. It gets kind of mathy, I'll admit it, but that would reduce the complexity dramatically. And just saying, like, look, it's hover is the equivalent of this base color along with a modifier, which creates this new color. You don't have to worry about it. We got you covered. But that could help keep, you know, avoid an exponential ramp of your color palette.
I love it. Yeah. It's just it's a value, right? It's a value and property pair that you just need to be able to nest somehow. I love the idea, especially if, like, I've noticed looking at the different combination of opacity and lightness, darkness patterns across our color ramp, there's a lot of systematic thinking in there, and those could be functions or variables. So that'd be great. I love it.
Yeah, I think this is where expanding the skill set of your design systems team is so invaluable, because a designer who's been, you know, their background in print may not be thinking about color systems in this way, but any engineer or design technologist that's done this for a while is going to think, why don't we just dynamically shift these colors, as opposed to, you know, stubbing all these out if they're only one usage and we're creating all these additional colors just for this one usage? Why don't we just have dynamic modifiers for these situations, which would dramatically improve the maintenance.
Yeah, I think another place where complexity comes in, and I'll preface this by saying that I came into the system with a certain amount of components built in React, and my job was to primarily serve a transition and serve those components in a fashion where designers could use them. So our number of components is extremely high. So I think there's the total, including some of the more atomic ones, there's 149 of them. And then it's a lot, yeah. And granted, the components are smaller, right? They're not, we don't have a lot of layouts, for example. We don't have any pages, but there's 149 of these things, and it's a lot to maintain. And you know, we've talked about this on a previous episode. Maybe we created too much flexibility by maintaining an abundance of subcomponents so designers could put together any permutation they can.
Yeah, and that's the challenge, right? Is that I'm assuming that you didn't intend each one of those components to be used with with every other component, right? There might be, a button may not supposed to be next to, some other component that you created, but if there are no guardrails in place, you are increasing the number of unfortunate collisions of components in doing so, which is challenging. And that's why I typically am trying to go as high up the ladder in terms of complexity, in terms of the composability of a component, because then you can control more of what pieces fit together and how they fit together. And so it's, again, more intentionality about how these pieces work together and how they're laid out. It just takes off so fast. So an example is 149 components. There's 11,026 two component combinations that you have in your system right now, which is good luck, right? Like good luck working through each and every one of those combinations. And that's the challenge, is that it sneaks up really fast. It does not take much time to get to a point where you don't understand how all the pieces fit together.
Yeah, we even had feedback that we wanted. Was it you that gave us feedback? Someone had given us feedback around the amount of subcomponents we had, and possibly using automation to generate the different combinations and put them up on a page, right? In a frame. Surely I'm not going to do that manually, because that's going to take me the half.
Yeah, and plus, are we really setting up anyone for success to look through 11,000 different permutations to decide which one makes sense? That's kind of my argument, is that ultimately this complexity doesn't benefit anyone. I understand the appeal of flexibility and be able to do whatever you want, but there comes a point where it becomes difficult to ensure a level of continuity and proper usage across the entirety of a large org. So you are ultimately, especially junior designers, you're setting them up for failure, because you're not giving them the guardrails and the guidelines that they need in order to create ideal experiences. And then on the design system side, it's even, the maintenance of it is impossible. And just to go back about how quickly these things increase in scale. So Davy has 149 components, that's 11,000 and change combinations. We have 85 components, roughly, give or take, and it's 3,500 combinations. So just you add 60, give or take, and you've increased it, nearly four times. And that's how these things take off. And so these are difficult conversations to have, because ultimately that implies that you're saying no to more things, but it's due to trying to avoid that exponential explosion that you get to with enough things in the system.
Yeah. And I'm not touting, I'm not here to tout, oh shit, we have 149 components, man. I'm more of like, oh shit, there's 11,000 permutations, and surely there's thousands of different permutations in code, and it's going to be near impossible to chase them down and to vet them now. Like, I think we've sort of gone down this path, and like I'll bring that back to design leadership. This is like a food for thought. Nothing we could do at this point than to possibly this is a perfect time for this specific conversation, because I had just sent out our survey for feedback this half, and we had gotten feedback that people would like to know more about common combinations of things. So yeah, quite simple. And it's not necessarily, we can't really be responsible for producing like too many templates, but we could show, these are different permutations of the footer that we've seen in the wild, or this is different permutations of a header bar with buttons. I got the opposite piece of feedback that we were too restrictive on certain icon swapping as well. And like that was the opposite. Like we purposely restricted the icon usages in buttons because there's only two different icons that you could put in a button. So the designer had said, oh, I want to be able to swap this icon with any icon in the icon library. But that's not really something that we approve. So if we were to think about that philosophy in more of our scenarios, I think that would probably cut down on that 11,000.
Yeah, we have a 100 color palette for Gestalt, and it's too much. It's too much. Part of the challenge is that once you are in that place, it becomes incredibly difficult to get out of that place. There's a lot of logical rationale as to how we got there, but I think the approach that we're going to try to take is say, hey, okay, so here's the full color palette. That's just our framework. It's the foundation, and abstract it out a level and say, here's the colors that you use within product. And here's how you use it. Here's why you use it. Here's when you use it, and then reflect those in our components. And ideally we would have some way to vet and lint appropriate usage, but I don't think it's fair to expect, you know, L3 designer coming in brand new, expecting them to understand how to use all those different colors in the appropriate way. I just don't think it's setting them up for success. And it's just it can be quite open to interpretation, and that causes a whole systemic set of issues in and of itself.
Yeah, I'm looking at the colors right now, the base layer. We have, just in terms of color values with the, unfortunately, with the dark and enlightened values in here, there's some number, it's less than 100, but it's not much less, maybe 75 or 80. In total, with the semantic layer above that, we have 337. So it's quite a bit, but I'm just looking at just even when you're using semantic descriptors for things like background color or background page or text page or text background, like that I think from a new designer point of view, if you were especially new to tokens or new to this method of thinking about colors, you see this red 100 five different times. How do I know which one I'm supposed to be using? And if I use the wrong semantic version, is that wrong, or is it technically, it might be wrong, but it's the same value, so doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting parallel because I think what you're alluding to is that this is another real harsh reality, is that complexity oftentimes creates even more complexity. Meaning, okay, we have too many colors. Okay, so what we need to do is create another layer on top of this color system that's less. So now we have two color systems because the other one has too many. So now we're abstracting it out and like, okay, now we have two color systems, but I'm not supposed to look at this color system, that color system. An example of that is, so cameras. All right. Back in the day, cameras were manual. You had to manually focus it. And it was, you know, like, it took some time to learn, but you know, you twisted the focusing knob and you focused it. Then we introduced autofocus. Okay, well, now you need, like, where do you focus? Now we need autofocus points. Now you need autofocus lock. Now you need, like, phase, are we phase shift? Like, center weighted? Like, my God, like, now you've turned a picture-taking machine into just a series of menu options to support one additional feature, which is autofocus, because it's not just one thing. One thing demands the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And then that's the problem, is that typically just by adding something, you are effectively beholden to add a bunch of other things so that that previous thing can actually work. And so that's where adding stuff is risky, because it's not typically just one thing. It ripples and it interconnects with all these other areas. And so that is the challenge, is sometimes even trying to reduce or blunt complexity creates new complexity in and of itself.
Yeah, the thing that comes to mind is, like you said, the designer that's using this. And yeah, another thing that we had asked also was just, we've talked about this on the Into Design Systems live podcast, but skill level in the tool. And it's not just skill level in the tool, but possibly familiarity in concepts like type systems or color systems. Like when there's too many options, does it become overwhelming? I know specifically for typography, yes, because it might just be the naming may not be very semantically accurate, or it may be too vague, and there might be no difference between 12 and 16. But if it's sectioned off and you had less, and there was something that said this is like body, or this is headings, or this is accent, like foot, small metadata, right? Metadata, that's what it's called. I can't remember. And I think that provides more value, and it makes it easier, because I'm thinking about just the designers that are opening up the libraries. And yeah, we've been hearing the feedback this week. I don't know where to start. These things look the same. So then that leads me to think, because we have so many different styles, different tokens, different components, we need more examples. And then the crappy part about more examples is then we have to maintain those examples.
Bingo. Yeah. It's not just the making thing. Then you're on the hook to keep those things up to date to support them. And it's not even just adding examples. Now you have more things that you have to answer questions about, you know, ad hoc questions. It makes everything more difficult, more burdensome. And that's the thing that, understandably, I don't begrudge teams that aren't a part of the system. They don't see that part of it because they don't own that part of it, and they shouldn't have to see that part. But that's the thing that I'm constantly concerned about is, you know, we're on the hook for this. And it, as we all know, it's harder to remove things than add things. Are we really going to be able to pull out of this decision if we go this way? And how much work is it even, you know, how much work would it be to even do that? These are the things I'm trying to think, not just like, if we add this thing, will folks be happy, but can we reasonably support this long term, you know, for the next 5 years? Is this the right thing to support? Is this going to burden our team and not allow them to work on more important things? And those are the tough conversations that you at least have to have with yourself internally, if not with design leadership, engineering leadership, and your customers, that there is a cost to this. Even if it may not be seen, there is a cost that you're paying every time you add something.
Thinking about this from just a design component point of view, sure, that's easier to strip out, like, because there's a finite amount of deliverables and then people leave deliverables behind. But then, like, a perfect example for us is we have this purple button that's not within like our brand colors. It's in fact, I believe it's a more rounded corner button, a pill size. It's the only pill size button, but we allowed it for a specific onboarding use case. Now, I think the crazy thing to think was like, yeah, this was sure. Like when we thought about this and approved it, it was a trivial decision. Sure, why not? This will allow this onboarding tour to pop every designer's favorite word, make it pop a little more. But then, like you had mentioned, like a few years down the line, now if we wanted to strip it out, who knows where and how many teams leverage this and how we could clean it up.
Yes feels really good. Yes is going to make you friends. Yes is going to make you popular at parties. That's the problem. No is awkward and creates conflict and makes you seem like you're not a team player. But it's also many times the responsible thing to do. And that's what makes it difficult, is that if you want that promotion, yes may be the right way to get that promotion. And that is this is the struggle that we're running up against, is oftentimes the incentives do not incentivize taking a more reductive approach to how the work is done and how we define our visual language. But ultimately that's going to set up the company for success, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah. The that onboarding button is a good example for us because it's let's imagine it's utilized by multiple product teams with different engineering point of contacts, for instance. Like, are we going to then either prompt the engineering teams to fix this and to utilize a new button, or do we have to do it and then do a code review, have them accept it or not accept it based on how important they think it is? And this becomes very, very expensive, like much smaller, because we had said yes to this thing that we thought was a trivial decision.
And here's the typical, here's what I've historically heard as a solution. We'll just add guidelines to say it can only be used for this, you know, for XYZ. Okay, great. Well, now you've added complexity to your guidelines because now there's like, you know, I before E, except after C. You can use this component, but only in this specific situation, which people may or may not read. And also takes attention from other more critical guidelines for that button component. You have to maintain that documentation and guidance. It still comes at a cost. You know, verbose documentation is complex in and of itself because there's a lot to learn and a high cognitive overhead. So that's the challenge, is that just by simply adding it to the guidelines, that too is complexity. The best way is just to never have that thing to begin with. And you've bypassed all of it, just by not having it to begin with.
Yeah. That's the exact right answer. Like, add some guidance onto your documentation, or add a description to the component, like, or add some, it's always adding something to support this new thing.
Yeah. And then the feedback, understandably so, is, man, it's just like, it's too much to read. I can't get through all of it. Well, like those two are completely related. You can make it better, of course. You can distill the language. But at the end of the day, if you got 11,000 different permutations, you got 11,000 different permutations, and there's no way to, like, at the end of the day, there's no way to bypass that reality.
Ah, shoot. Well, I got 11,000 things to check in and now. Thank you.
Well, and here's the thing that's really going to blow your mind, is that's just two component combinations. Let's talk about three component combinations. That's 540,274 three component combinations. Bear with me, last one. Four component combinations. That is 1,972,001. So you have component pairings, but if you want to show a lockup of four components working together, well, you got close to 2 million of those. And that's what I'm talking about, exponential complexity.
Oh, one thing that came to mind that I think we probably mentioned last year when I had started on this team was there was a big push to simplify our tables. And I think specifically being on monetization teams, you probably have a pretty robust table component. Our table framework. No,
I wish we did. It needs work.
Ours is pretty robust, and I think just based on designing in an atomic fashion from like a list cell point of view, now I'm thinking, shit, there's hundreds and thousands of different row combinations that it could be produced.
Yeah, and it's funny because we're discussing that, and all I can think of with a data table is how that can balloon into something that we don't fully understand how it works, because there's too many different ways it can be used. Yeah, it's a challenge, and I don't have an answer for something like that.
Yeah, that'd be a fun friend DA share out, where we could show you some of the improvements that we made to simplify.
Yeah, so, yeah, totally.
Or hitting 30 plus minutes. Thank you for creating some work for me, checking on those 11,000, 500,000 instances and combos.
Well, it's, you know, one at a time, right?
One component at a time, one token at a time. This thing will...
That song, like 11,072 permutations of components on the wall. 11,700. Yeah. Whatever it is, you just start with one and burn it down.
Yeah. and then we'll have 10 components on the wall.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.